the question last night, as we're looking at these kings, Jeroboam in the north kingdom, and Amaziah and Uzziah in the south. We are in the book of 2 Kings chapter 15. 2 Kings 15. Second Kings 15:1 begins the story of Azariah, whose other name is Uzziah. That's kind of used interchangeably. Interesting enough, there's another fella in the Chronicles that the same interplay is used. His name is Uzziah, not the king, but they call him Azariah as well. And so it must have been a commonly accepted nickname for Azariah to call them Uzziah. We've talked a little bit about that. So, you know, it's not too uncommon for us to have nicknames. We shortened Daniel. Was your given name Daniel? It's not. It's Dan.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then never mind you. Let's go over here to this one. And you know, we shorten his name from Daniel to Dan, and sometimes we just call him D.
Faster, right?
Right? It's faster, yeah. Well, you know, when he's in trouble, you just it's hard to think of the name. So, D!
I usually just hear Daniel.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. We go with a long name, so... you know, and we have other names. Robert becomes Bob, and sometimes John becomes Jack, and you know, we have different nicknames like that. And Peter becomes Pete, right? Yep. Uh-huh. Well, we get a crack out of Abigail sometimes because at one point she thought her name was Abby Gail Faith Kelly, and her name is Abigail Faith Kelly. Yeah, she thought Gail and Faith were separate names in there somewhere. Real fun one, has no bearing on our lesson tonight, but Kim's grandpa, we always called him Pappy Ward, his given name was Wardley, W-A-R-D-L-Y, Wardley Roy Rearick. And the story he tells us, and it's always hard to tell if Pappy Ward was telling you a story, if he was telling you the truth, right? He liked to have fun, but the story he gave us was that when he was born, his mom said she wanted to name him Ward Leroy Rearick, but the nurse put it on the birth certificate as Wardley Roy Rearick. And so he went through life Wardley. And you probably wouldn't know it. We always called him Pappy, but every time Grandma was agitated with him, she'd say, "Oh, Wardley." And so that's how we knew his name. That's always how you get everybody's full name, right, when they're in trouble. Eldon. Oh, I'd bet, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she had to get that changed before she could get a passport.
Yeah, if that paperwork's not all in order, it makes it a real hassle to try to get anything done. I got a letter one time that I was apparently an elder in the Mormon church, and they kept sending me these letters to my house, and I called them and I said, "I'm not a member of your church, take me off your list." And they said, "Well, is your name Brian Kelly?" And I'd say, "Well, yeah, but the birth date you have there was something like 1953. I said, "That's a little older than I am." And well, they said, "That's not you then." I said, "No, that's not me. Can you take me off that list?" And they said, "Well, if it's not you, we can't take you off the list." And I said, "Well, can you at least take my address off of there?" "Well, I'm sorry, if that's not you, we can't change the information." Oh, man. Yeah, don't you wish you could get them to do that? But all right, so the conundrum we were running into here as we look at the kings, is that print, is large? Let's go up just a little bit so we can see. We are in 2 Kings chapter 14 to begin with. Verse 17 tells us that Amaziah, the son of Joash, that's this fella in the south, lived 15 years after the death of Jehoash, son of Jehoaz, king of Israel. So we see his name up here. Now, what was the connection between Jehoash of the north and Amaziah of the south? What happened between them?
War.
There was a war, and who won?
Jehoash.
Right, Jehoash won. He actually captured Amaziah in battle and took him to the north for a little while before he let him come home. And when he brought him back under escort to Jerusalem, kind of a humiliating thing for a king to be brought back to his own hometown under escort from the enemy king, right? Jehoash also destroyed a couple hundred yards of Jerusalem's wall just to show you, you guys are weaker and you better just watch yourselves. So that was the situation between Jehoash of the north and Amaziah of the south. Well, the text specifically tells us that God did not allow Amaziah to endure that humiliation for long because Joash died. So we know that this war must have happened sometime right here in Jehoash's 15th year or his 16th year, and that would be Amaziah's 14th or 15th year, and then Jehoash dies. And so in the 15th year of Amaziah, again, verse 17, Joash dies, and his son Jeroboam II takes the throne. Well, that's all normal. That all fits into our paradigm very, very well. It fits into our dating nice and easy. Well, we know that Amaziah of the south ruled for 15 years after the death of Joash, and so that's kind of an inclusive reckoning. So that first year, the way it gets counted, totals out to 29 years, not 30. So he rules until for a total of 29 years, which fits well as well, because his 29th year then is Jeroboam's 15th year. Jeroboam lived 15 years after, Amaziah ruled 15 years after the death of Joash. So the problem comes in when we get to chapter 15, verse 1. In chapter 15, verse 1, it says, in which year of Jeroboam, king of Israel? The 27th. In the 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Azariah, the son of Amaziah, king of Judah, began to reign. That's this fellow down here. We call him Uzziah, or Azariah is another name for him. But it says that he begins to reign in Jeroboam's 27th year. But according to the previous dating that we have seen, he actually begins reigning in Jeroboam's 15th year. So the discussion we were having last week was, what happened to those 12 years? There's 12 years of discrepancy there. And the normal explanation is that the number in Hebrew for 15 looks remarkably like the number for 27. So a copyist must have made a mistake at some point in the past, and that's why it reads 27 instead of 15, but the right number is 15. Trouble with that explanation is, number one, we have no textual evidence of any variations in that number. All the Hebrew copies we have say 27 without fail. Second problem is that that really just introduces a concept that the scriptures are in error. There's something wrong with the Bible. God didn't preserve his word for us. And so that should be a problem in the mind of the believer to resort to saying that God made a mistake in the copying of the Hebrew Bible. Okay? As I said, it's one thing when we have several different manuscripts and there's a couple different variations, but one of those variations is accurate. In this case, we have no variations whatsoever. They all say 27. So we have to think about what could the answer be. And Eldon had an answer. Your solution to the problem was?
Something we don't know.
There's something we don't know that's going on there. Right. Mm-hmm. Any other solutions we came up with? Dan?
Aliens presented a time machine.
I love it. Aliens came with a time machine. Right after they helped Egypt build the pyramids, right?
Right.
And
the power was at the top of the...
That's right, yeah.
Watched History Channel, that's how they said
it. Oh, yeah. Isn't it amazing how much of the History Channel is dedicated to sci-fi speculation?
Every Friday,
mm-hmm.
Aliens.
Yeah. How does that qualify as history? Because
it was
well, that's true, yeah. Yeah. So did you happen to see the Answers in Genesis sent out a little update? They said that somebody in the northern Kentucky area, when they stop at hotels, is taking out the Gideon Bible And in the front of it is pasting a picture of a trilobite. And it says something like, this is Terry the Trilobite. He predates your religion and your God and humanity by 20 million years. Get another book. And so somebody's putting these pictures inside of Bibles, Gideon Bibles, in hotels in the northern Kentucky area. Oh, did they? Yep. Pretty bad. Yeah. But yeah. They like to say stuff like that about us. I was listening to one actor one time talking about things, and he says when he stays in a hotel, he always rips out Leviticus 17, because that's the passage that says you shall not lie with a man as with a woman. And he says, I rip that out of every Bible I see when I stay in a hotel. So, I just can't stand to have that in there. So, well, okay, but what about Leviticus, I think, 27, where it repeats it, not 27, like 22 or 23, where it repeats the command? Or Galatians chapter 5, or Romans chapter 2, or, you know, there are plenty of passages that talk about that. So, not that I'm encouraging him to throw away the whole Bible, by the way. So, at any rate, Pete, you got a solution for our 12-year problem? Yes, what is it?
This is about the Bible where he types in 27
sentences. Okay. 15. Yep, types in. You are a child of the 21st century. Yeah. Okay. Well, the problem is the Hebrew actually says 27. It's not a translation error. It actually says 27. Tim? 12-year prorectship. That's actually one of the explanations, is that Jeroboam started ruling 12 years before his official beginning, and so that he could have been a prorex with his father. Because Joash was involved in some wars. Remember, he's the guy that beat the ground with the arrows, or shot the arrows into the ground. So he was at war with Syria for a good portion of his reign. And it is possible that because he was administering the war, he put his son in charge of the kingdom somewhere around, well, where would 12 years be? That'd be way back here. His fourth year of reign. And that then Jeroboam had actually been ruling for 12 years before he became the official king. That's a good possibility. It is possible that that's what happened. Another explanation that we come up with, and Eldon, I'm going to hate to disappoint you. You say you came back just for this explanation, but my actual explanation is I don't know which one it is. So He's looking at me like, I can't believe I came out here in this weather and you don't know. There are several that fit the text that don't do violence to the concept of God's infallible word. And yet it still falls within the realm of, we may just not have been given enough information to make a definitive determination on this. So one of them is that Jeroboam had either a prorex relationship or a co-rex relationship with his father for 12 years. Another one is that when it says of Jeroboam that Uzziah started in his 27th year, it's actually giving Jeroboam's age of 27 years old. One trouble with that interpretation is then that Jeroboam started on the throne when he was only 12 years old. It's possible. There were other kings that started very, very young. And Jeroboam does have a very long reign. He rules for 41 years, which is a little bit on the long side for some of these kings. So that is possible that Jeroboam started to rule when he was 12 years old, and that he then was 27 when Uzziah took the throne. That's a possible interpretation. The other one that typically gets thrown around is that there was a pro-rex relationship between Uzziah and his dad Amaziah. But the language that's given to us in the text doesn't really state it that way. It pretty well tells us that after Amaziah died, the people made Uzziah king in his father's place, and that that's when his rule began. And if we move Uzziah's reign 12 years into the past, it really throws off the timing down the line, because everything fits very nicely from Solomon all the way down to the deportation to Babylon, we have a very good unbroken chain of records of years of the rulers over the southern kingdom. So that is one explanation. And a third explanation, I'll give you another one. The relationship between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom during this time was, as we said, Joash defeated Amaziah in battle, escorts him back to Jerusalem. It is possible that Judah becomes a vassal state to the northern kingdom at this point. And that though Amaziah is still called a king during the first 15 years of Jeroboam's rule, he's actually a vassal king. And that would be borne out by the idea that Joash destroyed the Jerusalem wall and escorted Amaziah back to Jerusalem under guard. And so it is possible that the first 12 years of Uzziah's reign are as a vassal king, and that it's in the 12th year of his reign, which would be the 27th year of Jeroboam's, that he becomes an actual sovereign king. That would fit within the language of the text too. So you've got three possible scenarios. Go ahead, Gene. Vassal means, so if you're a vassal, that means you are underneath the other guy. So in that case, Jeroboam II of the north would be a sovereign king over you. He would actually be ruling over the southern kingdom, even though Uzziah gets to keep the name king, but he doesn't actually get to make all the decisions himself, if that makes sense. So that's a possible scenario. But any one of those fits. But the trick is to say we have to fit within what the biblical text tells us, and we have to do so without saying that God made mistakes that we have to then fix. Because that should be a real problem in the minds of believers, saying God messed it up. And any one of those would work pretty well. So, having solved that problem, any other questions? We'll say that. Any questions or comments or other ideas that could be going on there? Nope, we covered it thoroughly, right? Or we have murkied the waters so badly that nobody can see their way forward. Eldon. All of the above, yeah. Well, here's my critique. The first option, we said that there was a pro rex relationship between Jeroboam and Joash. I think that probably fits the bill best. The trouble with it is there's no specific language in the text that tells us that was the case. So that's a little difficult. So if we propose that idea, we're kind of just throwing darts in the dark as to what happened. To say that the 27th year of Jeroboam is referring to his age is possible, but that formulaic expression that is used in the 27th year of Jeroboam is used every other time of the time that they've been ruling. So you've got a contextual problem with saying that it's talking about Jeroboam's age. There are some signals that say the southern kingdom could have been a vassal state. The trouble there is then that if he became sovereign state here, why his reign isn't counted starting from that point. But that one's possible as well. So which one do I favor, Eldon? I'm not entirely sure right now. I tend to lean away from saying it was Jeroboam's age when Uzziah took the throne. I think it's probably got to be either that Jeroboam was a vassal, I'm sorry, that Jeroboam was a pro rex, or that Uzziah was a vassal king. Because there is a statement, go to 2 Chronicles 26:15. So if you turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 26, verse 15, there is just an interesting little statement made. 2 Chronicles chapter 26 and verse 15. This is a description of Uzziah's reign, and it says, in Jerusalem, he made machines invented by skillful men to be on the towers and the corners to shoot arrows and great stones, and his fame spread far, for he was marvelously helped till he was strong. That little statement tells you that there was a period of weakness. And so could that be referring to his vassalage to the northern kingdom until he built up the military to a point that he was able to separate himself from Jeroboam enough to be able to rule on his own? And so there is a little bit of biblical language there. This really does highlight the point that there are areas where we can agree to disagree. There are a lot of times that language, agree to disagree, gets used of things that we should never agree to disagree on. Now, did Jesus actually rise from the dead? Or was it just some sort of fake? Did he faint and then he came back? Or was it all spiritual? It never really happened. You know, those are things we can't agree to disagree on because they change the gospel. If Jesus didn't actually die, was he born of a virgin or was Mary just a young woman at the time? He's got to be born of a virgin or you really do a ton of violence to the gospel. So we can't agree to disagree there because it completely violates the biblical text. But there are some things like this where the language of the scriptures, either we're not understanding them right, well, that's actually it, we're not understanding them right, or they're not clear enough to us in our understanding of Hebrew to give us a definitive answer. But does it throw the gospel or any major doctrines into a tailspin to take either one of those options? No, not really. The important things are going to be, are you introducing the concept that God was wrong? That's going to be a problem. Are you introducing a concept that says God didn't preserve the scriptures? That's a problem. But as long as you're working from the text, you can come up with sometimes a couple of different options. So, Eldon, I'm not sure which one to take. Yeah, and we're going to get to that because he did some pretty cool stuff. Yeah. So if you'll allow me, let's go ahead and move forward then. I'm going to leave that little textual problem, and we're going to talk about Uzziah, the priestly usurper. Because if you go to the passage in 2 Kings, so we're back in 2 Kings chapter 15. You keep a place, keep some kind of page marker there in Chronicles because we're going to want to read that later. 2 Kings chapter 15, verse 1, in the 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Azariah, the son of Amaziah, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 16 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. That's a long time. It's a good, long, stable rule. His mother's name was Jechaliah of Jerusalem. Now, remind me real quick, how did his father die? Nope. Not old age. He was assassinated. Right. There was a plot against him, and it started way back when he brought the Edomite gods back to Jerusalem. After defeating Edom, he brought their idols to Jerusalem and started worshiping them. And from that time, the people of Judah began a revolt. It didn't come to fruition for 15 years, but after 15 years, somebody finally decided it's time to end this, and they assassinated him. They bring him back to Jerusalem, and they bury him, and they make his son the king. Okay? So Uzziah takes the throne after his father is brutally murdered. Verse 3, Uzziah did what was right in the eyes of the Lord according to all that his father Amaziah had done. So how did Amaziah do? He did okay. All right, he did good in the beginning of his reign and then lapsed later into his reign. So what does that tell you about Uzziah? He's probably going to follow a similar pattern. Okay, and we'll see what happens as we go on here. He did right according to all that his father Amaziah had done. Nevertheless, the high places were not taken away. The people still sacrificed and made offerings on the high places. And this, again, is something that was continual throughout Judah. It was a problem for God's people. They were mixing the true worship of Jehovah with the nations around them. And God says, don't do that. Verse 5, and the Lord touched the king so that he was a leper to the day of his death, and he lived in a separate house. And Jotham, the king's son, was over the household, governing the people of the land. Now, the rest of the acts of Azariah and all that he did, are they not written in the books of the chronicles of the kings of Judah? And Azariah slept with his fathers, and they buried him with his fathers in the city of David. And Jotham, his son, reigned in his place. Okay, any questions? That's the life of Uzziah. Not a lot going on. And do any of you say, wait a second, he ruled for 52 years. There's got to be more than that. You know the answer? What's the answer, Daniel? Go to Chronicles, right? We're going to turn to the book of Chronicles, chapter 26. Nope, no, I'm sorry, 2 Chronicles. I'm sorry, chapter 20, yes, 26. I'm getting the names of the kings mixed up. Yeah, chapter 26, 2 Chronicles 26. In the book of Chronicles, we get a little bit more of a description of Uzziah's rule, and it's going to be a pretty interesting one. So one of the questions that should pop into your head after reading what we just did in the book of Kings is, wait a second, the Lord struck him with leprosy? What happened there? Anybody else want to know what happened there? I want to know. So we're going to keep going. We're going to find out why in the world would God strike him with leprosy. So chapter 26, verse 1, all the people of Judah took Uzziah, who was 16 years old, and they made him king instead of his father Amaziah. He built Eloth and restored it to Judah after the king slept with his fathers. Uzziah was 16 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jechaliah of Jerusalem, and he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord according to all that his father Amaziah had done. That we have read already. He set himself, verse 5 is where things begin to change a little bit. He set himself to seek God in the days of Zechariah, who instructed him in the fear of God. And as long as he sought the Lord, God made him prosper. So the whole time that he has this counselor, Zechariah, he follows the Lord. And he does what is right. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? There was another king that did that. That was Josiah. So as long as Josiah followed the high priest Jehoiada, Josiah did well. Tells you the importance of having good counselors in your life, doesn't it? All of us are prone to making bad decisions or getting off track at times, so we need to surround ourselves with godly counselors who can help keep us straight. And for most of us guys, we can recognize that 90% of the time, that's going to be your wife, right? She's going to tell you, that is the dumbest idea that I've ever heard. And we will say, you know what, dear, you're right. That was, yeah, not a good one. So let's change course. So Uzziah follows the Lord all of the days of Zechariah. Verse 6, he went out and made war against the Philistines and broke through the wall of Gath and the wall of Jabna and the wall of Ashdod, and he built cities in the territory of Ashdod and elsewhere among the Philistines. See, modern Israel is not the first group of Israelites to institute colonization programs in enemy territory. So the world gets down on Israel for doing this stuff, but that is their land, and Uzziah conquered the Philistines, as God told him to way back in the book of Joshua, and he begins settling Israelites in these new settlements and forming some colonies. And so he's reducing the Philistines down to vassalage. Verse 7, God helped him against the Philistines and against the Arabians who lived in Gurbaal and against the Meunites, and the Ammonites paid tribute to Uzziah. The Ammonites were a constant thorn in Israel's side. David had them subdued. After that, Solomon had them subdued, but they've rebelled since then. And so Uzziah brings all of these nations back into bondage, back into vassalage under Israel. Now, remember, what's going on in the northern kingdom under Jeroboam? Crash. No, it's not a crash. It's actually the same thing. Remember, Jeroboam brought Syria under the control of Israel? Jeroboam's expanding his borders. Uzziah's expanding his borders. This period in history sees an expansion of the Israelite kingdom that hasn't been seen since David. So they are restoring Israel to a place of prominence and power again. So it's happening in both the north and in the south. The Ammonites paid tribute to Uzziah. His fame spread even to the border of Egypt, for he became very strong. Moreover, Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem at the corner gate and at the valley gate and at the angle and fortified them. Remember what happened in his dad's day to the wall in Jerusalem. Part of it was destroyed. He's rebuilding it and he's putting up towers. If you know anything about medieval warfare, the idea is that if you just have a long, solid wall, it's very vulnerable, because if people get right up against the wall, it's really hard to just lean out and shoot them down, because as soon as you lean out over the wall, you become very vulnerable. So the idea is your wall isn't straight. You have it stick out here, because now this point can shoot back at the wall. And you have towers that stick up, because they can shoot farther, and you can hit the enemy before they get close to you. All of these things are military improvements going on. So he builds all these towers. Verse 10, he built towers in the wilderness and cut out many cisterns. For he had large herds both in the Shephelah and in the plain, and he had farmers and vine dressers in the hills and in the fertile lands, for he loved the soil. This guy is prosperous too. He's multiplying the flocks and herds of Israel. He's doing a lot of modern farming methods for Israel in the day. What are the cisterns for? Water. Why do you need water? Animals drink a lot of water, don't they? Yeah, it's a dry area, and maybe there's enough shrubbery for the animals to live on and eat and thrive, but there's not enough water, so he builds all these cisterns where you can pull water out of the ground, or collect it. I guess a cistern if you collect during rain. So he has all these sources of water out in the wilderness so that he can raise these larger herds. And he's got a massive agricultural project going on where he is planting more fields and vineyards because he loves the soil. I like this guy. Yeah, this is my kind of guy. This is fun stuff. So don't be surprised if sometime this summer some towers pop up around church property and we dig a wall surrounds the. That's right. Walls are immoral. Yeah. Yeah. We'll call them secured borders. All right. So he loved the soil. Verse 11. Moreover, Uzziah had an army of soldiers fit for war, in divisions according to the numbers in the muster made by Jeiel, the secretary, and Maaseiah, the officer, under the direction of Hananiah, one of the king's commanders. The whole number of the heads of fathers' houses of mighty men of valor was 2,600. That 2,600 is the number of commanders. That's not the number of the army. The number of the army comes next. Under their command was an army of 307,500 who could make war with mighty power to help the king against the enemy. This is the standing army. This is not the total number of warriors, because Israel frequently employed a militia. Every able-bodied man 20 years old and up was generally called out upon at some point to fight in the battles. But Uzziah's got a standing army of 307,000 men. That's a pretty significant force in those days. Verse 14, Uzziah prepared for all the army shields, spears, helmets, coats of mail, bows, and stones for slinging. So this is not a group of farmers with pitchforks going into battle. This is a well-trained, well-prepared army. They've got all of the equipment they need. And not only do the soldiers have the weapons that they need. Verse 15, in Jerusalem, he made machines invented by skillful men to be set on the towers and the corners to shoot arrows and great stones. What are we talking about? Catapults and what do you call the big arrows? Ballista. We generally think of these things not coming into existence until the medieval era in Europe. But we got to recognize that the ancient man was extremely intelligent. And so here we've got record of Uzziah of Judah building these machines that can shoot giant arrows. Now, why do you want to shoot a giant arrow? So you can put a hole in a guy this big instead of a hole this big? You put it through another machine, right? Because what happens if somebody's bringing a catapult against your wall? You want to be able to take that thing out of commission as quickly as possible. We get into these matches all the time. World War II was a fun time because, you know, the Germans came out with their Tiger tank, and then we came out with, you know, a Sherman tank, and then they came out with a Tiger II, which had thicker armor and bigger gun, and we had to come out with a tank with a thicker armor and bigger gun just to get through their thicker armor. There are accounts when I think it was the Tiger IV, the Tiger IV tank was this massive, I think it was 80 tons, this tank had really, really thick armor on it, and our guys are on record as saying we shoot at it, but the bullets just bounce off. You know, so you can imagine you're driving along with a tank, shoots a bullet that big around, and it's bouncing off these other tanks. Now, the trouble with the Tiger tank was, at 80 tons, how fast do you think it moved? Yeah, not very quick. They had to transport them on rail cars, by the way, because it was so expensive in gasoline to just drive them around. So that was one of their downfalls. Eldon. Yes.
And what happened was, the soldiers fought that way. They found out that all the German vehicles were equipped with siphon hoses. And what they were supposed to do is disable an American vehicle, siphon all the fuel out of it, put it in their tanks, keep going. And they got wind of the fact that the Germans were short on fuel.
Mm-hmm. Let them chase you. Yeah.
One by one, they would chase it. And then they'd circle around for a while. And whenever their batteries run down, they couldn't run their guns anymore. And then they went in for the kill.
Yep. Yeah, there's ways to take out even tanks, aren't there? I forget who it was. Who was that real colorful general tank commander in World War? I don't know.
Omar Bradley.
Was it Omar Bradley? I think it might be him, but he was one of those guys, either him or Sherman, was quoted as saying, my men can eat their belts, but my tank's got to have gas. So he get a little bit of flack for treating his men that way, but he pushed and pushed and pushed. So anyway, Uzziah is building these machines all around the place that can take out enemy siege works. So if the enemy comes in with a trebuchet, Uzziah's got a ballista ready for you. If they come in with catapults, he's got a catapult himself. So kind of like, just drawing a blank on his name too. Dr. Seuss is the Butter Battle Book. They just keep coming up to this wall with bigger and bigger weapons. You know, first they have these guns, and you know, it looks like Dr. Seuss kind of guns. And they come to the end, and they're both standing there holding this bean that if they throw it, will completely obliterate the other civilization. It's a commentary on nuclear war for kids. You know, why he felt necessary to do that, I don't know. But there it is, because if you want to stay current in war and you want to stay mighty, you have to keep up with the technology, and we face that all the time. Uzziah was doing it, and so Jerusalem becomes well fortified. His army becomes very, very strong. He's subjugating other nations to his nation. And so how has that gone in Israel for the past couple of kings when they had some major victories? How have they responded? Badly with, Tim?
Pride.
Verse 16, when he was strong, he grew proud to his destruction, for he was unfaithful to the Lord his God, and he entered the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. Why is this a problem? Only the priests can burn incense. Where is the altar of incense? It's in the holy place. It's inside the temple. It's not crossing the veil to where the ark was, but you're in the holy place with the table of showbread on one side and the altar of incense in front of the veil. Only the priests were allowed in there on their daily routines to burn incense and to make sure everything was in order as part of their service to the Lord. God forbade everybody else from being in there. But Uzziah says, I'm a strong king. I'm conquering all these nations. I'm something special. I should be allowed to go in there. Look at all the kings of all these other nations around us. They function as the high priest of their country as well as the king. Why shouldn't I? Why did God forbid that?
The kings were of war.
Kings were of war? Oh, sometimes, not always. Gary? They were told not to. Why do you think God kept those offices separate? Right? Now, here's something interesting, because it actually, we talk about David, and it talks about him offering sacrifices. So was he functioning as a priest, but now Uzziah is not allowed to? He was wearing a white garment, yeah, and he was dancing. Was he functioning as a priest there? Don't know? Must not have been, yeah. No, he wasn't. David comes from which tribe? Daniel, I think you said it. Nope, not Benjamin. Judah. David's from the tribe of Judah. The Levites were the priests. Tim? So they wouldn't have too much power? Okay. So when it says David and other kings, even Solomon talks about him offering sacrifices, does that necessarily mean that he's the one that collected the blood and threw it on the altar? No, because he can be credited with the act as the leader of it without actually performing the act, right? So who won the Civil War? Abe Lincoln? Yeah, he won, didn't he? Or was it General Ulysses Grant? Or was it the soldiers that fought? And you can say the answer to all those is yes, of course it is. So, but at this point, it's very, very clear that Uzziah is the one trying to hands-on offer this sacrifice of incense. And that was clearly forbidden under the Old Testament law. Incidentally, here I think is why. Because there is one prophet king. There's one priest king. Who is it? Jesus. Very specific. David even writes of the Psalms of him. You are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. He's writing about the Messiah. No other king gets to fill that role of Melchizedek except the Messiah. Uzziah is trying to usurp messianic privilege by functioning as a priest king. Not good thing. So, what happens here? Verse 17, Azariah the priest went in after him with 80 priests of the Lord who were men of valor. What's this represent? Force of arms, right? This is such a usurpation of authority that we have to stop it right now. Do you tell kings no, Jim? Do you get to tell kings no, you're not allowed to do that? Not very often. Eldon? You can only do it once. They don't generally like to be told no, especially if they're exalted in their pride and think that they have no limits. And that's where Uzziah's come. So these 80 priests surround him and they tell him, it is not for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord, but for the priests, the sons of Aaron, who are consecrated to burn incense. Go out of the sanctuary, for you have done wrong, and it will bring you no honor from the Lord God. Naturally, Uzziah's response is to repent in sackcloth and ashes, right? No? Daniel's shaking your head. Why? What's he do? Very bad things? Look at verse 19. Uzziah was angry. Well, of course, he's just got told no. He's not used to being told no. He's become so strong he can do pretty much anything he wants, but now he's being told no. It's like little kids. When you tell them no, what do? Hold their breath, stomp their feet, scream and cry. Okay? They have to learn how to deal with being told no. It's one of the fun parts of parenting. Well, Uzziah acts like that little child. He's angry. He had a censer in his hand to burn incense. And when he became angry with the priests, leprosy broke out on his forehead in the presence of the priests in the house of the Lord by the altar of incense. And Azariah, the chief priest, and all the priests looked at him, and behold, he was leprous in his forehead. And they rushed him out quickly, and he hurried himself to go out because the Lord had struck him. Why has he got to leave so quickly? Yeah, nothing unclean inside the temple, right? And so now you have this leprous man standing in the temple, so they get him out of there as quickly as possible. Already they're going to have to perform some cleansing ceremonies in the temple because a leprous man was there. All right, this is a pretty big deal. So what does leprosy mean for King Uzziah? Unclean, separated from what? Yeah, from everything. So when is he allowed to go into the temple again? Never. When is he allowed to be around his family again? Never. Okay, here is this example of somebody who does something wrong, and I'm not sure if Uzziah repents of this in his heart and mind. Probably does in the time he's got left. We're not exactly sure at what point in his reign this happens, but the consequences of it remain. Whether he repented or not, the consequences remain. Uzziah, from this point on, can no longer function as king and can no longer join in the temple worship. And so it says he was a leper to the day of his death, and being a leper lived in a separate house, for he was excluded from the house of the Lord. And Jotham, his son, was over the king's household, governing the people of the land. And so that's it. In his pride, he tries to usurp a position that isn't his, and God strikes him and disciplines him for it. Now, there are some other really interesting things about Uzziah that I want to go to real quickly. So first of all, I want you to turn to the book of Isaiah, chapter 1. So turn to your major prophets and go to Isaiah chapter 1. If I can manage to get there, those pages are sticking together. Okay, Isaiah chapter 1, verse 1. Somebody read that for me. In the days of which kings? Uzziah. Isaiah the prophet begins writing in Uzziah's reign. Okay? So the first of the major prophets has come onto the scene. Now, turn again to, keep going through your major prophets, go into your minor prophets, and let's go to Amos. Amos chapter 1. Mm-hmm. Oh, let me think here. Amos. Yeah, right after Joel. Amos chapter 1. Oh, I'm sorry. No, Amos. Amos, right after Joel. Amos 1:1. Somebody read that for me. Go ahead, Eldon. Okay, so which kings are we talking about in Amos? Uzziah and Jeroboam. Okay, Uzziah and Jeroboam overlap 26 years they rule together. Patricia? Chapter 1, verse 1. Mm-hmm. So, Amos writes there, and he refers to a major event, an earthquake. Boy, don't you wish you knew when that happened. We're not entirely sure. We think it's sometime right around here in the 23rd or 24th year of Uzziah's reign. And that would be very close to the end of Jeroboam's reign. Okay, but it gives us some perspective on when all these things were happening. So in the middle of Uzziah's reign and toward the end of Jeroboam of the north, we have some of the major prophets coming on the scene like Isaiah and Amos. And let's turn to another one, go to Hosea. So you're going to turn backwards from Amos to Joel to Hosea. Hosea chapter 1. Okay, somebody read for me Hosea 1:1. Go ahead, Patricia.
The word of the Lord that came to Hosea, son of Nun, in the days of Uzziah, Joram, Ahijah, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce all of them.
No, that's fine.
King of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joram, king of
Okay, so again, we have another prophet, Hosea, who dates himself to the reign of Uzziah and the reign of Jeroboam, right where we're talking about here in these times. So Uzziah is on the throne when several major prophets come on the scene. And actually, there's another one that mentions Uzziah, but was written later, and that's Zechariah. He refers back to that earthquake because he tells people, you're going to tremble before the Lord just like you did in the days of the earthquake, in the days of Uzziah. And so this earthquake becomes a major, major mention. Now, one last thing before we let you go here. Go turn to Matthew chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1 in your New Testament. We have talked a little bit about Matthew and his genealogy and why there are names missing from the genealogy. And we said there were a series of four kings missing from his list. And so we want to go to Matthew chapter 1, verse 8. I'm going to read the names of these kings. Asaph was the father of Jehoshaphat, and Jehoshaphat the father of Joram, and Joram the father of Uzziah. Now, here's what's interesting about that, because who was Uzziah's dad? Amaziah. And who was Amaziah's dad? Joash. And who was Joash's dad? No, Athaliah wasn't his dad. Who was Joash's dad? Ahaziah. And who was Ahaziah's dad? Jehoram. So we have this list here. Jehoshaphat was the father of Jehoram, which is true. But then it says that Jehoram was the father of Uzziah. Ahaziah, Joash, Amaziah are missing from the messianic line. That's Matthew chapter 1, verse 8. He skips down several generations. We talked about this. Why that is, because it was Ahaziah, or Jehoram, really, introduced idol worship into Jerusalem. And God is disciplining the messianic line by removing Ahaziah, Joash, and Amaziah from those lists. Interestingly enough, Amaziah tried to continue that by bringing the gods of Edom back to Jerusalem. And God reduced him to a very low state, defeated him by the hands of the northern king. And it's Uzziah, the first one who doesn't return to idolatry since that happened. And he's the one that gets included again in the messianic line. He tries to usurp a position, so he's by no means completely innocent as he tries to offer the priestly sacrifice of incense there. But he doesn't try to bring the idols back into Jerusalem that his dad Amaziah brought in. So, Uzziah, the kingly usurper, has an interesting reign. A lot of things going on during his rulership. Any questions about any of that? We covered 52 years of history tonight. How's that feel? That's why you're tired. Yeah. Whew, boy. Yeah.